situation. So even though when you look to try and find the person who's listening to the teachings, you can't find a person, you can't isolate a person that is findable under analysis, that is listening to the teachings. Still, we can say that we're listening to the teachings on the conventional level. But really, check for a minute, and who is listening to the teachings? Is it your ear consciousness? Is it your mental consciousness? Can a mental consciousness listen to teachings? Can an ear consciousness listen to teachings and understand them? Exactly who is listening? So even though we can't isolate some independent person that's listening, we can't go to the other extreme and say, nobody's listening to the teachings. Because I think somebody's out there listening. So on the level of mere appearances, on the level of mere designation, we can say, I'm listening to teachings. But if we try and find exactly who that I is, it becomes very elusive. So this is a very good meditation to do when we're upset, to ask ourselves, who is upset? Or who is offended? Who is insulted? Who isn't being understood? Very interesting to try and find that person that has these strong emotions. And very interesting to try and find the emotions themselves. When you say, I'm angry, exactly what are you referring to? Is there only one feeling of anger that remains constant? Just what does the word anger refer to? Does it refer to your heart beating faster? Does it refer to getting hot? Does it refer to a feeling in your mind? Exactly what is anger? So if we can't find a truly existent person who's angry, and we can't find any truly existent anger, then what's all the commotion about? So this meditation on emptiness, when done properly, can really make the afflictions evaporate, because we come to see that the misconception that the afflictions are based on, that things exist from their own side objectively, we see that things don't exist that way. these strong emotions fade away, the mind remains peaceful. So seeing that all sentient beings suffer like we do from the wrong grasping, the wrong conception of inherent existence, let's have the compassionate thought that wants to free them as well as ourselves and to attain full enlightenment to do that. So it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Especially when we're clinging on to some kind of strong emotion or strong identity. And then to just ask ourselves exactly, who is that? And the whole thing evaporates. Yeah. It can be really a relief. You think of all the identities in life we set ourselves up with. I was thinking of, you know, the incident in Paris last week. You know, these identities of, I'm a Muslim, and I'm Jewish, and I'm French for freedom, or I'm a cartoonist, or whatever. You know, there were so many identities flying around in there, weren't there? And yet, what are they? What are they? What makes somebody a cartoonist? Is it their body? Is it their mind? What makes somebody a Muslim? Is it their body? Is it their mind? Which mind? Which part of the body? Yeah? And when we get offended about something, you know, there's a cartoon and we get offended. And they could have been drawing something about Buddhists, you know, and maybe we get offended. Yeah, what are we offended at? This line, that line, this word, the other word. Yeah, exactly, what are we offended at? So it's quite interesting when you really look, then, you know, it's like, huh? My mind is making all of this up. My mind's imputing meaning on it and getting upset. So you go there, and then it all seems like, whew. And then you go, but, you know, this person said this about me, and they can't do that, na-na-na-na-na. So it's interesting, you know, you can kind of relax it for a minute, and then it's like a rubber band that snaps back, you know. Like, no, but, you have to listen to me. I'm right, you're wrong. Do things my way. Okay, so, thus suffering continues, doesn't it? So, last time we were talking about the pot. It sounds ridiculous, you know, we're talking about a pot when people are killing each other over identities. But if you can understand how the relationship between the pot and its attributes, then you might be able to understand the relationship between yourself and your attributes. Or someone else and their attributes. Okay? So we say pot, but, you know, we could use something else too. Yeah? Like terrorist. That's a nice, inherently existent concrete word, isn't it? Terrorist. We say the word terrorist. Everybody know what a terrorist is? We do, don't we? Our enemy, the people we're afraid of. Paris. Well, okay, there's some guy. What were they dressed in? Black pants, black jacket. They must have been from New York. Everybody in New York dresses in black. Yeah, black pants, black jacket, black whatever over their face. Okay. So what's a terrorist about that person?
I don't know, maybe the gun they were holding.
The gun that they're holding is a... But wait, is the gun a terrorist? No, let's follow. Is the gun a terrorist?
No, but it's a symbol of it.
Oh, the NRA would not agree with you that a gun is a symbol of a terrorist.
Mm, and they weren't at the end of the gun.
Yeah, but the NRA's right, you know.
According to
NRA. Yeah. So is a gun an indication of a terrorist? Yeah, what about that toy gun that that little boy in Cleveland was holding? Yeah? Or is a cop a terrorist? Maybe. But cops don't see themselves as terrorists.
Deer hunters.
Or a deer hunter, are they a terrorist? For a deer they are, aren't they?
Yeah.
They really terrorize deer. Yeah? But what makes somebody a terrorist? Yeah? Just having a gun doesn't make them a terrorist.
The intention to do harm?
The intention to do harm? But there's a lot of people with the intention to do harm who aren't terrorists. Yeah, there's people who are criminals who want to do harm, but they're not terrorists. And there's people who don't see themselves as wanting to do harm. Yeah?
It depends on who's doing the labeling as well, doesn't it?
Oh, it sure does seem like that, doesn't it? Yeah, who's doing the labeling of terrorists? People call them freedom fighters. People call them terrorists.
Sons, husbands.
Yeah, sons, husbands. They call them all sorts of things, don't they? Huh?
Daughters.
Yeah, a few daughters, not many. When I was in Israel many years ago, they took me to one prison that used to be a British prison camp, you know, before Israel became a state when the whole area was still Palestine. And they had pictures on the walls there of different things that the Zionists were doing, you know, to try and get their state. And they would, you know, sabotage buses and, you know, plant bombs in the Hotel David or David, yeah, and do all these things. And I was with Israelis and as we were going through this, and these were very liberal Israelis. And I said to my friends, I said, these guys were terrorists, weren't they? And my friends looked at me and said, well, in school they called them patriots. You know? What about the Boston Tea Party?
No.
Yeah? Would those guys be considered terrorists by modern standards?
Only by the British.
Only by the British. For the American standard, they're patriots, aren't they? But when you look at what they did, they're terrorists.
You can ask a few Canadians if they weren't genocidal after the Revolutionary War, they took all of the loyalists and shoved them into Canada. Sure did.
Somebody's getting offended here. But it's quite interesting, you know, when you start looking, you know, what makes somebody a terrorist? Quite it.
A label and a basis,
but we can't even agree on what the basis of the label is, can we? Yeah? Because if you lived in Iraq, depending on who you were in Iraq, who you labeled a terrorist would change, wouldn't it? You know, where you lived, which side you were on in anywhere in the Middle East, who you labeled terrorist would change. Yeah. But even if we could agree, even if we could agree that one person, we all agreed that person was a terrorist, what exactly about that person makes them a terrorist? Yeah. The intention to do harm, you know, that doesn't make somebody a terrorist. Because we also have the intention to do harm. Sometimes, don't we? We wouldn't call ourselves terrorists. And in fact, somebody who intended to harm our enemy, we wouldn't call them a terrorist. We would call them
a friend
and an ally. Yeah?
It's a constellation of qualities.
It's a constellation of qualities. Yeah? But like exactly what it is the person's body a terrorist? Yeah, when we say we killed the terrorist, it means the body died. But is the body the terrorist? When a person's lying asleep, their body is there. Is that body a terrorist? Doesn't look like one, does it? Sleeping body. Yeah. Is their mind a terrorist? How can your mind be a terrorist? Be a terrorist, you have to go kill somebody, and you don't kill somebody with your mind. You may have the motivation to kill, but does the motivation to kill make you a terrorist? Yeah. All these kids playing video games? Yeah, who can't discriminate between, you know, what's what on the screen? And they want to kill what is on the screen? Yeah. You were going to say something?
Well, there would be moments of mind, though, where a person is detonating the ball and pulling the trigger.
Okay.
And those moments of mind, then they're permanent.
Okay, so there's certain moments of mind when a person's detonating the bomb. But the mind isn't detonating the bomb, is it? Yeah, the body is. So is the person's finger the terrorist? Yeah?
Mm-hmm. And they go through counseling, and at some point you figure out that they're not radical, and then you release them. Mm-hmm. And there was a report about that in the paper, and I was like, how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like asking people to confess whether or not they're communists.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, huh?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I guess the government would say some show of whether you're committed to using violence to execute what you believe in.
Yeah.
It's like a witch hunt in the past.
Yeah.
Looking at a woman and, oh, that's a witch.
It's kind of, in some places, looking for terrorists, it's like a witch hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, there's some very good research on the actual interrogation techniques that are used cause people to confess that are not.
And
they, at the time they confess, they've been talked into believing that they were doing this.
Yeah.
Even though there's physical evidence
that they weren't. Okay, let's keep back on our discussion here. What is the terrorist?
It's a compound collective of mind and body.
So the collection of the body and mind is a terrorist? But a collection, what's a collection? It's just a bunch of different things. How could a bunch of different things, which are many, which are plural, be one terrorist? Or is each part of the collection a terrorist? Is the mind a terrorist and the body a terrorist? The finger a terrorist? Do you have to have an ID card stamped terrorist? Yeah. What makes somebody a terrorist? It's really interesting, isn't it? And, you know, you think of, like, these people who get kidnapped somewhere. And, you know, you get kidnapped and your mind goes, ah, I was kidnapped by a terrorist! And, like, instantly, you know, you freak out because you know what happens to people who are kidnapped by terrorists, you know. But what happened if you said, one of my mothers from a previous life took me in a car? That's just as accurate, isn't it? Isn't it just as accurate of a description? Somebody who was my mother in a previous life is taking me for a ride in a car.
I think a terrorist is a label based on a perspective.
A terrorist is a label based on a perspective, but where are you going to find that perspective? Where's the perspective?
In the person making the label.
Yeah, but what is it? Is it a moment of consciousness? Is it the meaning? Is it the conceptual appearance? What is it? What is that perspective? A conceptual appearance that's a permanent phenomena.
It's a label in the perspective of the perspective.
A label in the perspective of the perspective. But it's interesting when we start to ask exactly, you know, what makes somebody a terrorist? Yeah, but is that person who that, you know, at a certain moment, was it on Wednesday that they had it? What day of the week that was the attack? Anybody remember? Whatever day of the week the attack was it, were they only terrorists on that day? In those particular hours, yeah. What about when they woke up that morning and were brushing their teeth? Were they a terrorist at that point?
Terrorists don't brush their teeth.
Yeah. Were they a terrorist then? On what basis are you labeling somebody a terrorist? And what exactly is it that makes them a terrorist? Is it a thought?
The conventional world.
Yeah, conventional labels. But, you know, is it a thought that makes somebody a terrorist? Is the thought existing in a, you know, a body of a person from a certain ethnic background? But you can't even say that because there's people, you know, you have kind of white WASPs from America going over and being terrorists. So, yeah? Okay, so even the action of labeling terrorist is a dependent thing, because you're saying that for you to label somebody a terrorist, it would have to be somebody you didn't know. Because as soon as you started talking to them and heard their story, then you probably wouldn't label them terrorist anymore. So it's quite interesting, isn't it? And what exactly is it that makes somebody a terrorist? And yet that word is so loaded, isn't it? You just say it and whoom! You know, you can get people to vote for anybody you want them to vote for as long as you say terrorist.
You say it in an airport.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So if you do away with the label and you do away with, you know, the solid person, mm-hmm. and yet you have the action, would require compassion for their karma that they're creating for themselves. How does that fit into the process of trying to find out who the terrorist is?
Okay, so you're saying if we take away the label, and we just look at
the karma
that that person's creating by killing other people, and we have a response of compassion.
Hopefully,
yeah, for that person who is creating that karma, because they're creating the cause to be born in the hell realm, for sure. Then your question is?
How does that fit into the process of trying to identify the terrorist?
Okay, so how does that then fit into the process of trying to identify a terrorist?
Or label a terrorist, or call somebody a terrorist.
Terrorist, or even arrest a terrorist. You know? Like, that's my mother from a previous life who's creating the cause to be born in the hell realm. Yeah, and you're arresting that person. It sounds totally different than saying they're arresting a terrorist, doesn't it? Yeah.
Different label and different perspective.
Yeah, different labels and different perspectives. But if a terrorist existed inherently, then it couldn't. That same basis of the label couldn't have more than one label. Because if things exist inherently, the label, is the object. Yeah, the object and the basis are completely the same. So if you then labeled that person terrorist, you couldn't label them my mother from a previous life who was creating the cause of the hell realm. Because if something were inherently existent, then it is that exact thing, okay? Because what came out here is, if you look at that person this way, they're my mother from a previous life. If you look at the person this way, they're a terrorist. But that involves different perspectives. If things existed in and of themselves with their own nature, you couldn't look at them from different perspectives because they would just have their own nature. They would be that thing without depending on how you looked at them. Yeah? Conventionally existent things you can look at from different perspectives and see them differently and call them different names. But things that are objectively existing, they exist out there as that. So there's no different perspectives. Okay, because remember that inherently existent means independent existence, which means it doesn't depend on anything else. Yeah? So being a terrorist would not depend on your perspective, how you were looking at that person. Okay, so if there's something, good question, if there's something out there in the universe that's inherently existent, yeah, could we perceive it? Yeah. No. Yeah, because something that exists inherently has its own nature. It doesn't depend on anybody perceiving it. Yeah. It doesn't depend on parts. It doesn't depend on a relationship with a mind. It doesn't depend on anything else. How could we perceive something that is totally independent of everything else? Something that exists like that cannot exist, actually. Okay. Yeah?
And if there was a self-existent terrorist, they would either always be terrorizing or never terrorizing.
Yeah. So if there were a truly existent terrorist, yeah, and we labeled that on the basis of their action, that they're harming, it would mean that they always have to be harming. They could never be sleeping. They would always have to be harming. Otherwise, we wouldn't call them terrorists. If they weren't harming, then they wouldn't be a terrorist. But they have to be harming in a certain way, don't they? Yeah. And they have to be harming certain people in a certain way for a certain reason. From the perspective of particular people. So exactly who makes somebody a terrorist? Yeah? Aren't we the ones who make somebody a terrorist? By that label. We're broadcasting this. I don't know what the FBI is going to do to me now. What'd you say?
Terrorist empathizer.
Yeah, terrorist empathizer. Yeah.
It seems like it makes, in this instance, I think other instances, it's harder to deal with. Because terrorist is easy. You just go stop them by whatever means necessary. But if it's somebody who's suffering, it's somebody who's bothering their previous life, then you've got to look at it. At least I do, I've got to look at it and say, well, what can I do? I've got to try to stop them and save them.
Okay, interesting point, that if something is truly existent, we relate to it in a very simplistic way, doesn't it? Don't we? You know, truly existent things, they are this, and this is how you relate to them. So they're a terrorist, so you kill them. Yeah, don't even bother arresting them, you know, unless you really have to. Yeah, but kill them. And you relate to it in a very simple way, because the label terrorist gives you the permission in the eyes of society to just go bang, bang, and no punishment at all. But if you label it my mother from a previous life, who's creating the cause for the hell realm because they're so deluded, then how you relate to that person is much more complicated, isn't it? Because your mother from a previous life, you don't want to go kill that person. Yeah? Because just as your present mother in your next life will be your mother from a previous life. You know, you don't want to go kill your mother. It doesn't matter which lifetime it's from. But on the other hand, they're creating negative karma that's harming themselves. So what do you do? Yeah. It's quite interesting, isn't it? You know, how when we see things as truly existent, then we don't have to think very much about how to relate to them. Yeah? You just put them in a category, put them in a box, and relate in a particular way, particular predetermined way. Yeah? Whereas if you label them something different, it becomes much harder to figure out exactly what do I do. Yeah? I mean, especially, let's say your mother died, you know, 20-something years ago. and then was reborn as this, you know, 19-year-old who's now, you know, becoming a terrorist. Then how do you relate to that person? Yeah. Okay. Should we go back to the pot? The pot's much easier, isn't it?
Can I ask one more question about terrorists? If something was inherently existing, and the definition of a terrorist is causing harm, if something was inherently existing, it wouldn't be able to function, it wouldn't be able to be doing an action to begin with.
Yeah.
Or it would be causing an effect, and that would be related to things.
Okay. So this is another good point, that if somebody were a terrorist inherently by themselves, they couldn't function because they would be permanent, because things that don't rely on anything else can't function. Yeah, means they don't depend on causes, they don't change by conditions. And you see that even giving somebody the label terrorist depends on a whole scene of different people, doesn't it? And different actions. It's not that you can just look at one person's body and say terrorist. Somebody is a terrorist within a certain situation. You know, things are mutually, you know, they exist relationally, you know, in relationship to other things. Yeah. So you would have to have the whole set of circumstances. Yeah, with a war and this and that and people on different sides and blah, blah, to call somebody a terrorist. If you didn't have that situation and you just saw that same person and they were playing with little children, you might call them a father. And actually, I'm sure some of those terrorists are fathers. Yeah? But calling somebody Papa and calling them terrorist, it's like, how do you put the two together if you have these rigid categories where we just put somebody in a category and relate to them via that label? Yeah. I think that was one thing that was very difficult for children of SS officers after the war. You know, this person's an SS officer and they're also Papa. Yeah, on the, you know, is it on the same basis of designation or not? Are Papa an SS officer? Is the basis of designation the same?
The line that's labeled is different.
The basis of designation.
Same line, same body, different behavior.
Yes. Yeah. So are the basis, is the basis of the label? Can somebody be Papa and a terrorist?
Yes. Not at the same time.
Not at the same time? So you stop having children when you become a terrorist?
You're not functioning as Papa when you're functioning as a terrorist.
But is the function the only thing? Because if when a terrorist goes home and they're playing with their children, they're not functioning as a terrorist. Does that mean that the police can't arrest them at that time? Sorry, I'm not a terrorist anymore. I'm Papa.
And who says they can't be at the same time? Because he could have his son beside him shooting at the same target. Papa's the terrorist.
Papa's a terrorist. Yeah.
So. Terrorist ideology may be that they're trying to do things that they think are going to change the world.
Yeah.
better for their kids.
Yeah.
They think they're making things worse. They think that what they're doing is going to help.
And the terrorists think they're making a better world for their kids.
A good papa.
Yeah, that they're being a good papa. Okay. But is it the same basis of designation? Or is it a different basis of designation? It is changing moment by moment, isn't it? So exactly what is the basis of designation? Yeah.
Huh? Characteristics. The two labels have different defining characteristics that are not necessarily the same. They're not necessarily mutually exclusive. But
yeah. So there's different characteristics that aren't the same. That aren't mutually exclusive. Yeah. When you label somebody terrorist, do they have to be acting as a terrorist at that time? No. They could be at home sleeping, watching TV, playing with their kids. But they're still a terrorist.
They could be innocent.
Yeah. They could be any number of things at that time. But it's interesting, even so, it's not just the activity of being a terrorist at that very moment, that activity inherently makes you a terrorist. It's that at some time in your life you had to do that. But what happens if at some time in your life you did it and then you realized you were wrong and you changed? Can you stop being a terrorist?
Yes.
Does that mean that the police can't arrest you when you stop being a terrorist?
No.
No, you're not a terrorist anymore, but they're still going to arrest you, aren't they? So you're arresting a non-terrorist and prosecuting them for terrorism. But everybody would agree that that would be fair. So interesting, isn't it? When you look like this, names begin to appear really rather ambiguous, don't they? What does a name refer to? What does terrorist refer to? On what basis does it give the police the justification to arrest you?
Probable cause.
Yeah. So it's curious,
like,
isn't it? It's very interesting, yeah, that the term terrorist, it would be interesting to do research when that term came about. Do you remember, people who are my age, do you remember the word terrorist when we were little?
Charlie Manson,
was he a terrorist? He was a mass murderer.
Huh?
I don't really remember. Do you remember?
I know that the word terrorist originally meant someone who inspires terror. And in the last 25 years, certain governments have changed that word because it specifically does not include a government that inspires terror.
That's a good point. That the word, yeah.
Not even an official government that they're opposed to, because they don't want to undermine the use of terror through government actions.
Yeah. So only an individual can be a terrorist,
a
not a government.
Yeah,
although initially the word terrorist meant somebody who inspires terror, which governments do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I grew up in the time of nuclear war as a sense of terror.
Yeah.
The government wasn't a terrorist, but it was a sense of
there was terror. But nobody was a terrorist.
Yeah. They're saying the early
bomb was a terrorist.
Yeah. the threat of nuclear war was terror. But no, we didn't talk about terrorists at that time, did we?
The use of the word terrorism began in 1795 during the French Revolution.
The use of the word
terrorism
began in 1795 in the French Revolution. But what about terrorist? But how did they say, why did terrorism, the French Revolution?
Because of the reign of terror.
Oh, the reign of terror, that's true.
Actually, the first reign of terror, you had at least two.
Yeah.
During the French Revolution.
They said the earliest known organization that exhibited aspects of a modern terrorist organization were the Zealots of Judea.
It's applying the modern term to
so that. So the French Revolution provided the first uses of the word terrorist. Yeah. Use of the word began in 1795 in reference to the reign of terror initiated by the revolutionary government. Yeah.
The reign of terror. But terrorist. If the government did the reign of terror, would you call that French Revolutionary government a terrorist? No, we were just saying now that governments can't be terrorists.
Okay, then it says, the agents of the Committee of Public Safety and the National Convention that enforced the policies of the terror were referred to as terrorists.
Okay. So there were, that's very interesting.
It
was aspects of the French government that were first called terrorists.
The French Revolution provided an example to future states oppressing their populations. It also inspired a reaction by royalists and their opponents of the revolution who employed terrorist tactics such as assassination, intimidation, and resistance to the revolutionary agents. Okay, so it was the government who was first.
So it was the government, and it was the revolutionary government that was for fraternity, liberty, and equality that were first called terrorists. Now, isn't that interesting? Wow.
So this, this call goes to the idea of deserving.
Of what?
Deserving. If we label someone with a negative label, then they are deserving of some sort of violence or coercion. If we label somebody with a label we consider positive, then they're deserving of praise. Mm-hmm. So this is, hatred and attachment.
Yeah.
It goes back to this labeling and whether things deserve or don't deserve.
Yeah. That how we label somebody, just that word alone, will influence how we relate to that person. As if that person were only the meaning of that particular word. They were nothing else besides the meaning of that word. That's really narrow-minded, isn't it? Yeah.
Imagine moving into a new neighborhood and introducing yourself as a terrorist. Block party.
Yes, the block party. Hi, I'm Papa, and I'm also a terrorist. The other person said, yeah, I'm also Papa, and I'm a terrorist. I work for the CIA. Well, why don't we call the CIA agents who were doing waterboarding terrorists?
They were called that, just not by us.
Yeah, they were called that, but not by us, yeah. Yeah. So quite interesting, this whole thing about inherent existence, isn't it? When you really start searching and analyzing what makes something a basis of a particular label. Yeah. and how that label, whatever label it is, determines so much about how you relate to that object afterwards.
We have two terrorists in here.
Oh, yeah.
One terrorist.
Yeah. Yeah, from the viewpoint of Maitri, yeah, Mudita is a terrorist.
So the word terrorist is a good example of how like a media or a government agency can change a label in order to affect how we look at things, how other people look at things. But I'm thinking about how we label things ourselves in our daily life, depending on whether we're attached to them or whether we're angry at them, and how we do that ourselves.
Exactly.
Somewhat unconsciously.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the person who, in the meditation hall, who arrives, you know, 1 minute late for every session, becomes a jerk, you know, on the basis of arriving 1 minute late for meditation. Yeah. But are they always arriving 1 minute late for meditation? When we label them jerk and give our reason, that's the only quality we see in that person. Is they arrive a minute late for meditation, and that is intolerable. It breaks all the rules of the universe and gives me the justification for calling them a jerk. And then that's all I have to know about them. Oh, there's this jerk that I'm doing retreat with. Yeah. Who also washes my dishes. Who also vacuums the floor I walk on. Yeah. Who shovels the snow from the paths. Are they really a jerk when you look at those, them doing those qualities? Yeah. Or are they a kind sentient being? Can somebody be a kind sentient being and a jerk at the same time? It's interesting, you know? Because you can be, if you don't have to always, you can be a jerk even when you're not arriving late for meditation. As long as you did it once, you're a jerk. So even you're not every single moment of your existence arriving late for meditation. Yeah, you're still worthy of that label, jerk, even though it occurred for one moment in your lifetime. Okay? But then, yeah, so you're a jerk forever and ever in the mind of that other person.
Until you do something nice for me, and then there's a chance that that label might change.
Well, until you do something nice for me, but it's, you're doing something nice for me is not good enough. Because if I don't know you did something nice for me, I'm not going to change the label jerk.
Right, well, it has to be, no.
So it has to be you do something nice and I know about it. And I consider it sufficient atonement for the evil that you did against me. Yeah, it has to be a very large thing. Jerk, you earn that label by just walking in the meditation hall. That's all the person did was walk in the meditation hall, and we label them jerk. So that's all you have to do to be a jerk is walk in the meditation hall. Yeah, to be labeled a kind sentient being, you have to shovel these paths and shovel that path and vacuum here and cook there and sweep there and praise me. And, you know, you have to do a whole song and dance routine.
Meanwhile, she's labeled you a jerk also.
But that's why she's a jerk.
So everybody in the world is a jerk.
Everybody,
or somebody.
Everybody who disagrees with me is a jerk from their own side. Okay?
So there is jerk nature.
Yes, there is jerk nature. That's the way we look at it. Isn't it? When we label somebody a jerk, they have that jerk nature and they are irredeemable. They can never change from being
until.
A jerk. Huh?
Until.
Until?
Until.
What?
Until they do something to take away that jerk.
Momentarily.
Well, they were now shoveled this path and that path and that path, and they made you launch, and they took care of you ditches, and they...
And they didn't tell you they did that, but somebody else told you that they did that.
And then he arrives late, or she arrives late.
And the jerk.
And then they're a jerk again.
Oh, she's tired.
Oh, yeah.
After
all
the things they're doing for me, her tired.
Yeah. Right. They're tired. They're not a jerk. Yeah. And they're arriving late at that moment doesn't bother me, does it?
That's right. Yeah. Good today.
Yeah?
So, the person doing all these things in a series of moments, and we notice some of them, and they're really vivid in our minds, and we kind of like push out other things, and then we recall them often if it's something that we like that. Is that grasping at something that?
Well, what would you define as grasping if that wasn't it?
Could you repeat what he said?
That's a perfect definition of grasping.
Yeah. Okay. So he was. You said it. How did you say it?
A series of moments of somebody doing something, and we notice them for a moment, and it's very vivid in our mind, and then we recall it often.
Yeah. So somebody did a particular action, and we remember it again and again and again and again and again. Yeah. So isn't that grasping at something as inherently existent? So you see, even grasping at an air in existence has different perspectives on it. But there is some conventional reality. Okay, so we didn't talk about pots at all. But maybe there's something to think about as a result of this. Yeah?
All the labels that will come up for each other during the next 3 months.
Yeah. And all the labels that we've given people in the past, you know, on the basis of maybe one or two actions, we've given somebody a label, and that becomes the entire way we relate to them forever and ever. You know, somebody harmed me at one moment, so they become evil person. And no matter what else they've done in their life, no matter how kind they've been to any other person, all I can see is evil person. Yeah? That's like you give it a label, and you forgot you gave it a label, and you think it is whatever you labeled it. And that certainly creates suffering, doesn't it? Because here's one person who did one mistaken action, and then we make ourselves suffer our entire lifetime for it because of the label we gave them. And that basis of the label was only, you know, what, 5 minutes in their life, a half an hour in their life? And any sentient being is much more than that, isn't it? Aren't they?
And when you think about, like inmates that get that kind of label, ex-cons, and no matter where they go, they're related to as this, to think about how hard it is to change them because everyone's relating to you with this solid, negative thing continually.
Right. Yeah, so when you think about the inmate and everybody labels them criminal or, you know, worst of the worst, and then you start thinking of yourself in some way like that, then you rebel against the term but you've still internalized it. And so that you're relating to that term all day long, you know, trying to say, no, I'm not that, or, oh, you called me that, okay, then I will be that. We want me to be rough and obnoxious because you treat me like that? Then I'll be rough and obnoxious. I'll fulfill what you think I am. Yeah, on the basis of that label. Like little Tyrone who couldn't learn to read because somebody said, you're stupid. Okay, so let's be aware of our labels and how we forget that we labeled. And to really, when we find ourselves labeling, to say, on what basis am I giving that label? Yeah.
Can I just come back also? I'm thinking about the emotion that is combined with the label and who feels the emotion so that you also kind of reflect about your own self.
Yeah.
How are you existing, actually?
Yeah. I mean, that whole thing of how the emotion brings, I mean, the label brings on an emotion.
Mm.
And once that emotion's there, we're off and running. Mm. Yeah. I mean, our mind can't even go back and say, did I correctly label it? Jeffrey talked about that one time years ago. His teacher was telling him, you know, if you're going to be a Buddhist, you have to get used to being wrong a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Because all of our perceptions are wrong. Mm-hmm. They're mistaken. Yeah? So if you don't like to be wrong, yeah? And we've got to learn to admit that we're wrong. I mean, and you see that so clearly sometimes when you meditate. It's like, wow, you know. Now I see why the Buddha said sentient beings' minds are filled with wrong conceptions. Because, boy, my mind sure is. Yeah. And I believe that. I believe my wrong conceptions.
Mm-hmm. If we're not willing to admit that, wasted time being, and that we were wrong, we're just going to keep wasting time being
and
wrong.
Being wrong, right? Yes. Good point. If we can't admit that we've wasted time and we've been wrong, then we'll keep wasting time and being wrong. Yeah.
Same issues.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I was also thinking that Sulina said Dalai Lama when he was young and imagining that he was reflecting exactly these kinds of topics and then looking out the window with his magnifying glass and seeing the prisoners and mm-hmm. then deciding that it's not the right way to deal with prisoners mm-hmm. because of his insights.
Yeah. Well, he had a His Holiness had a particularly difficult time because one of the prisoners in the Potala was one of his lamas. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So is that a prisoner? Is that my lama? But he also knew that that monk was doing some naughty things. Very difficult, you know? And he was able to hold on on that ever-changing basis of body and mind, you know, that they called, you know, so-and-so, that all these different identities, yeah? And he was able to call up different identities at different times, which is remarkable. And, you know, which is why he's the Dalai Lama. But, you know, when we can't do that, well, then we get ourselves really tied up in knots, you know? Because he said, to two of his teachers, you know, Tata Rinpoche and Retting Rinpoche, we don't know whether they were fighting or whether it was their attendants and their labrangs that were fighting. But anyway, Retting Rinpoche was imprisoned in the Potala by Tata Rinpoche. And His Holiness said, you know, when he did his sadhanas, they were my teachers, they were kind, they taught me, they were, you know, like the Buddha in terms of how they helped me on the path. And then he said, but when I got up from my meditation and I looked at the political situation in Tibet, I had to tell them what you're doing is wrong. And he could hold both of those in his mind. Yeah. So telling them they're wrong did not mean he hated them and disrespected them and thought they were useless. But seeing them as his teacher didn't mean that they could never, you know, make any mistakes. So he could hold it. But it's hard for us when we put somebody in a box to hold them as being more than that box. Okay, let's dedicate.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it, have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Zotsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase.
Idam
Gura Namandala Kamiryatayami.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzing Gyatso Chenrezig, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma,
done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the west.